7 a.m. waking up in the morning. Gotta be fresh, gotta go download. Gotta get my podcast, gotta have it in my phones. Hearing everything in the interviews going, talking on and on, everybody's joking. Gotta get down to the train stop. Gotta catch my train, I hear it in. Kicking with Jacoby, sitting with Ross WB. Gotta make my mind up which writer is drunk. It's Black Heart Gold Pants. Gotta get down on podcast. Everybody's looking forward to the podcast. Podcast. Black Heart Gold Pants. Gotta get down on podcast. Everybody's looking forward to the podcast. Podcast. Party and party and party and party and fun, 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 fun. Looking forward to the podcast.
Hello.
Spencer, what's going on? It's a turtle.
Hello.
Hello. It's Don Cheadle.
Don Cheadle? Oh, my goodness. How are you gentlemen doing?
Excellent. How are you doing, bud?
Doing well. I'm going to grab a beverage before we do this.
Yes.
But what are
Feel
we?
Free.
What are we talking about? I have about 15 minutes, maybe 20.
Okay. We'll do a very brief overview of SEC football, and we'll talk about your charity work, but mostly let's talk about WrestleMania.
Okay, yeah. I'm down for all of that.
Okay.
Very good.
And in advance, I appreciate the plug of my shameless charity pending.
It's not University Children's Hospitals, but it's good enough.
Yeah, well... Just remember, you guys really should pull for the funding of a hospital, because, you know,
Rhabdo. Everyone's got Rhabdo.
Everyone has Rhabdo.
I was out for drinks for happy hour tonight with one of my buddies who said, I kind of overdid it on the squats last night. I said, oh, Rhabdo, how you doing? It was like I was Rick Muscles, only with bigger problems.
Oh, Iowa jokes.
Yes. All right, we all ready to go?
I'm ready.
Spencer, you're sufficiently beveraged?
I'm beveraged. I'm good.
Okay. Black Heart Gold Podcast 55. What is this, LV?
I think so, yeah.
A lot of vent.
Hey!
Yeah. Hey, ho! Pat Vent, Adam Jacoby. It is Tuesday night in lovely Des Moines, Iowa. I'm dropping golf balls on my floor, and we're joined by Spencer Hall from Every Day Should Be Saturday, SB Nation, and various other endeavors throughout the internet. Spencer, what's going on?
I was like mentioning the New York Times first, even though it was on their college football website, right, their blog. It was on the quad, and I was like, yes, Spencer Hall, contributor to the New York Times. And might I add, to Professional Bull Riding Monthly.
Really?
Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, I contributed a piece to Professional Bull Riding Monthly written like probably 3 years ago now that was written from the perspective of a bull. And they
valorized was it just, was it just my testicles hurt over and over?
Pretty much, but it was basically saying that they get all of the credit, right? The cowboys and not the actual bulls, who are the ones, you know, capable of maiming people, which is what people are there to see. And they bowlerized it and cut it in half. Like literally, like in this magazine, if you had a copy of it, my piece is cut in half. It ends like mid-sentence. So it's like, it's fantastic. The check didn't bounce and it seems really avant-garde.
So they pay by the word, but they determine how many words exactly.
I guess it was pretty draconian, but you know, being
it's like the Sopranos finale. Like the bull was killed halfway through the sentence.
Yeah, it just
all
like,
went to black.
That's it.
So we've got Spencer here to talk about 800 different things in about 20 minutes, so we're going to go pretty quickly here. Before we get any further, you've been a frequent and voluminous contributor to Name of the Year. Do you have any favorites so far in this year's bracket?
I predicted that Taco Bia Monster was going to
yes.
be the monster of the bracket, which he really is already by name. Like, if his name was Taco Monster, that's a strong lean right there. He even overtakes favorites like Joe Shortsleeve, which really, Joe Shortsleeve was the sleeper. Like, last year it was Roy's Spancake, because you just started saying Roy's name out loud, and you're like, God damn, Roy's Spancake. That just sounds fantastic out loud. But Taco Monster, his middle initials are BM. And
the worst possible two middle initials. The worst.
Exactly. And in addition to that, he's a doctor. He has doctor in front of his name. So it's Dr. Taco BM Monster.
Have we determined what he's a doctor of, other than diarrhea?
I believe it's not a medical doctor. I think he's like a doctor of chemistry or something. I'm kind of talking out of my ass, but I remember that it was something academic. So
it's got to be gastroenterology, right? I mean, like, there's no other way that goes.
If it was gastroenterology, then seriously, that's just reality trolling us. That's just reality being like, you mad, world? I like him, and I also I was really big into oh my goodness, I'm trying to remember his full name, because a lot of these have this like fantastic full name. So there was a guy named Monsterville in the bracket as well.
Monsterville Horton the Fourth.
Yeah, Monsterville Horton the Fourth. Like, wouldn't have stopped, like, he didn't make...
It was like the Ohio State Kentucky of this year's bracket. Like, those two should not meet that early in the entire.
No, it's unjust to both. It's unjust to the principle of competition and to both stellar competitors and the audience. And yet we had to vote one of them off. So, but I really do think it's going to be Taco BM Monster all the way through.
Here's why I didn't like Monsterville Horton the Fourth, is that it doesn't follow the normal rules of sequential naming of towns. You know, like Monsterville. If you have a Monsterville in one country and then you build another Monsterville in another country, it's not Monsterville the Second, it's New Monsterville. Or, you know, it's like
new Monsterville.
Right. Monsterville Heights.
Oh, nobody goes to Monsterville Heights after dark.
Oh, no. No, it's so.
I got two things to throw in here. One, and Spencer, this is a question for you. We know that you have an equal aversion to Purdue. I mean, we consider our most hated rival. You deny their existence.
Yeah, I mean, really, this is... I'll play along with your crazy little game, Mr. Imaginary Schools.
Right. So, which guy gets preference in your bracket? Purdue basketball recruit Basil Smotherman Jr. or Jadeveon Clowney, who's got a 7 seed in the crotch tangle?
That'd be Jadeveon. There's a Jadeveon.
Oh, excuse
Clowney.
Me.
As I told Drew, I'm like, I speak Southern, which includes a strong focus in African American name studies. So I can say that name with confidence. It is Jadeveon, as Steve Furrier says, Devin.
I took a syllable out, Spencer, just to make it as fast as the SEC. Like,
he does.
Right through there.
By the way, we do our Big Ten blogger addresses us as the blogger from the slow states. And that's like the most endearing thing to read at like 8:15 in the morning. Somebody like, hello, heidi ho, slow states reporting in. That's fantastic. You know, they're like, you're playing along at 7:45. I appreciate this. But I think in that bracket, I was really a fan of any name I can create an entire mythos and name behind. Like, I know Jadeveon Clowney. And Jadeveon Clowney, by the way, is going to be an ungodly talent at South Carolina. He's going to be huge. It's going to be terrifying watching him play, provided he's not an idiot. Which, he did get pulled over by the police at Columbia already. But, you know, I don't know.
That was mistaken identity, though. He's okay.
That was walking around while black.
Right.
It was allegedly walking around while black, although he is like, you know, like, I thought about this though. I was like, well, how many 6'5" monster sized dudes with dreads out there just walking around Columbia, South Carolina? And then I thought, well, actually, there's a ton. That's a pretty common description. There's some huge corn syrup swollen people moving around South Carolina of all races and creeds. Why not? I was going to go after Basil Smotherman because of the name, because, damn it, there's like a whole story there. There's a passion to be written about the Smotherman family and their rise and fall, right?
They were in The Great Gatsby, right?
They had to be. And there was a guy, I think his name was Dursley. It wasn't Dursley. That's out of Harry Potter. I made the same mistake with Drew. But there's another family on the other side who that's their opponent family. That's their rival, right? Their other. And it was like the Dunkleys versus the Smothermans. Oh, the Smothermans. Wretched people. So I was a big fan of Basil Smotherman because, especially if you say it, Basil with the long A.
Mm-hmm. The other part I wanted to make is that I once worked with a woman named Judy Graham, so Judy Graham Swallows is both hilarious and disturbing.
Because unlike the rest of us, you have a visual.
Yes, I do, and she was like 65, and that was 10 years ago.
Hey, you know, the fastest growing subset for all growing sexually transmitted diseases in the United States, the elderly. Just putting that in your head.
It's sort of the last undertapped market, so to speak.
No pun intended.
Hey-o.
Speak for yourself.
Yes.
I'd prefer to.
Okay, from our second favorite event of the year to our favorite event of the year. Spencer, you were at WrestleMania.
Yes, I was.
And you're not a huge WWE guy. So as an outsider, what was your takeaway from the greatest sporting event in the history of the world?
Well, I will cop. I'm not a total noob. I was a big fan during high school and college, and then fell off because, you know, adulthood, it gets harder and harder to say, you know what, in addition to blowing an entire day watching college football, you know, and a good Thursday, and maybe a Wednesday or a Tuesday, I think I'm also going to just blow out 3 or 4 hours watching wrestling. Yeah, that doesn't fly.
Right.
But it was a new experience for me because I hadn't attended a lot of wrestling. I think the last one I went to was in 1997. I went to a WCW Thursday night match in Nashville, Tennessee at the Memorial Coliseum where my brother...
Holy shit.
Yeah, and where my brother excitedly pointed to a couple of women in extremely flimsy dresses who were done up way too hard, like Russian bride hard, right? And pointed to them and said, look, whores! And he sounded so excited. He was in high school at the time, so, you know, he was like, look, peel whores! Those are whores! He was so thrilled. So I saw Chris Benoit. I saw a little bit of like wrestling history. I saw Chris Benoit.
Wow.
The now departed Chris Benoit wrestle.
Yes.
I wasn't totally immune to the experience, but the live experience of WrestleMania is entirely unlike anything that you really could tell a foreigner about. Like they really wouldn't believe any of it. Right? You would describe the scale and you would describe the pomp, the circumstance, and what was actually happening and how much action there was. And they would say, there's no way that this could A, happen, or B, that you could pay for it. And yet you could roll it out there and be like, there's our national greatness, ladies and gentlemen. Bow to it. There's a point, by the way, where you know that things are going to be awesome. Because I was wandering around. I had no idea where I was supposed to go. And the press people kind of, they just let you loose. So really, I was just kind of wandering around the floor where they were putting people. And I couldn't find the press box, which was out of its normal place, because the WWE, they do make a press box, believe it or not, but at the same time, they also take over the press box for the families, which I think is kind of pimp, but they're like, no, fat boys, we take the nice press box at the Georgia Dome. You know, like, that's where all the bitches be sitting, all right? But anyway, I was wandering around, and you know that something's going to be absolutely awesome when Sheamus walks out and they have this screen. It's like this massive, you know, building-sized television screen, and they say, Sheamus, and they play the most stereotypical Irish music imaginable, and this huge albino man with dyed orange hair comes out, and everyone starts chanting, Sheamus, Sheamus. And, like, yeah, this is going to be fantastic. And it was.
So, okay, something I've always wanted to know, I've never actually gone to one of these events before. It's just never been worth my while. I've never imagined it to be worth my while. Plus, it's not like there's ever like WrestleMania in Des Moines. You know, it's always those like sad, like promotional, like midweek things that are never going to make it on air, and it's just the two guys yelling at each other on the microphone and then fighting for 5 minutes. Like, you're describing something that's never going to happen in the state of Iowa. Just so you know. That all aside, whenever we watch the wrestling on TV, you know, there's always these pyrotechnics and special effects and shit like that, and we sort of become accustomed to them. Certainly, they don't stand out, they don't amaze us or anything like that. Do the pyrotechnics do they actually grab your attention when you're live?
Oh yeah, because it's indoors. It was in the Georgia Dome, so indoors it's all reverb. And as I'm fond of, you know, telling anyone, I've heard a tornado in that dome, which is
yes,
pretty
you
loud.
Have.
And it's not a dissimilar sound. It really it's ridiculously loud, and they're going off constantly for almost anything. They had a pre-match intro where Kerry Hilton comes out because it's Atlanta, and they have her sing "America the Beautiful," right? And she sings "America the Beautiful," and when she does, right, they're playing this montage behind her, and they play this like kick-ass Danger Zone montage with like F-22s and like soldiers just, I don't know, kicking ass. What they're doing, like, you know, loading guns and looking steely and stuff, and they're setting off fireworks behind it. And at that point, you know, that's another sort of point where you're like, oh my god, I'm in America. Fuck yeah. Like, this is
hang on, here. I'm hard as a rock.
It's going to be really hard to write with this throbbing erection, you know. it is just as loud. What you also don't see is the lighting rig up and all of the stuff that they do for the setups. It's for the crowd. Now, it's also for TV, but like when The Undertaker comes out, they have a long ramp, right? And it leads all the way down the stage, and they start flooding everything with this bone-chilling smoke machine. And you think, all right, old-fashioned smoke machine. It'll be like the one the Miami Hurricanes used to come out to, right? Like one smoke machine at the start of the tunnel, like the kind that, like, you know, Ric Flair used a couple of times, you know, coming out. Little air of mystery before it dissipates into the crowd. The smoke machine that they use for the motherfucking Undertaker booms all the way down into the pit itself and into the ring. Like, and that's strictly for the people in the upper deck. Right? Like, wrestling's cool because it's theatrical, but a lot of it is still done for the dude up in, like, row 20.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, I mean, in that sense, like, they're very much about giving everyone there what they came to see. And there are a couple of wrestling hipsters, which there are out there. And Brandon Stroud is one. Brandon Stroud,
you're talking to two of them right now, Spencer.
Yes.
You guys. And Brandon Stroud. Brandon Stroud is like,
yes.
Everything was from like 1990.
He's the king of them.
He knows more about wrestling than any human being I know. Right. Or, you know, follow on Twitter. That's my definition of know here. Right. And he's absolutely brilliant. And he complained about it, you know, all being from, you know, 1995, right? From 2000, right? Because it set it around the Rock, Stone Cold. But no one there had a problem with it at all. I mean, that crowd was amped the entire time, both for new and old. The biggest ovation of the night, I can remember, was for the Orton CM Punk match, right?
That's starting to grow on me as the best match of that.
That's the best match of that. Yep, that was.
It was, and I will tell you this, as somebody who, you know, is unaccustomed to the live art of wrestling, it had some real theater to it. And that's the point. You know, I mean, that's like a really frilly, pretentious-ass thing to say, but it did. It really did feel like when everything that they had done wasn't improvised, but was, right? Like, they were acting it out so well, and they were selling their moves so well, and were both so athletic in doing it, that when Orton pulled out the RKO in the final, right, when he comes out and he wins the match on a
spoiler
kind of event, which everyone knows is coming, right?
Yes,
right.
But when that happens, it was fantastic. It seemed spontaneous. And I was like, that's why that's the best match of the night, because, yeah, it's scripted, and yeah, everybody knew it was going to win, and nobody gave a shit, because that was absolutely brilliant, and no one saw it coming.
Right. Now, as a relative noob, as a guy who hasn't seen it a lot lately, who was it, other than possibly CM Punk and Orton, who did you take away as the show stealer that you hadn't seen before, other than like, The Rock and Stone Cold, who you clearly knew?
Both Orton and Punk, and I am getting the name right there, right? Like, CM, I'm nervous about CM Punk.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. You've got it.
Yeah, wrestling fans, do not let you forget, Jack. They were both fantastic to watch. And I will say, and with all due seriousness, one of the stars of the night, and a superb performance for somebody who'd never done this before, Snooki was amazing.
Yeah, how the fuck about that?
She demonstrated real athleticism. I was shocked.
How did the crowd react when she busted that out?
Just like everyone else, they were like, what the fuck? Because prior to that, you know, she had done a pretty good job in hamming it up and had done, I think, what everyone considered to be an acceptable level of celebrity cameo,
mm-hmm.
right? And I'm going to ask you this. I want to ask the interviewee this question because I know you have definite opinions on it. Go ahead and start thinking about your best and worst celebrity cameos in wrestling, because it's pretty common, and I know they're not all created equal. But then she pulled off the finishing move, you know, which was a flip, like a double flip across the ring that I think finished with like an elbow, right?
Yeah, 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 or like a splash, yeah.
Yeah, basically, like a splash, which again, default wrestling move when you're not really sure what you're doing. That's a nice splash! Nice senton splash! That dropped everyone's jaws. And the big matches themselves were kind of a letdown. They
mm-hmm.
really were. Like, even The Undertaker versus Triple H, long, little drawn out, lot of laying on the ground. I know they're big dudes, but not a lot of drama in that match.
Yeah, it was only dramatic if you operate under the premise that those finishing moves are actually physically devastating to them, and you know they're obviously not, and that's just part of the theater of it. Like, the worst thing that happens to you when Triple H does his finishing move is the back of your head smells like his nuts for the next 3 days, but that's about it. Also, your ears might be a little.
He's like a Komodo dragon. You know, he waits for you to get that smell in. It causes a bacterial infection, and then you die.
Oh, it's one of those slow acting finishing moves.
Right, right. As Keith from Lonely Island would say, he suffers from stinky dick. But the other part that was fun was being in the press box and, you know, with guys who were journalists. And first of all, journalists who cover the WWE for any reason, they clap, which is great because that's what journalists all over the world do. You know, they cheer, they care, they get mm-hmm. their beer in the press box. We suck. I don't know what Puritans got a hold of press ethics around 1920 or 1930, but the rest of the world does it right, and we do it totally fucking wrong. And which is why the WWE press box is so fun. Everybody clapping. Everybody seemed really happy to be there. It was unlike, you know, a lot of the press boxes I've been in.
Well, we're happy that you were there to give us an honest and nonpartisan view.
Oh, well, I have to ask you the celebrity cameo question. I don't want to let that go.
Oh, yes. Summer cameo. The best is technically Mr. T because he saved WrestleMania 1.
Ooh.
The objective best
I hate to say it.
But LT?
It's probably LT.
Yeah.
And the worst is absolutely Dennis Rodman versus Karl Malone.
Oh yeah, that the only thing worse I've ever seen as far as celebrities, it's a tie. It's either the extended run of ICP as wrestlers in WCW.
They're still doing it, by the way.
No, oh well, really? Okay, but not on TV.
Bloody Mania 3, baby.
Yeah, yeah, they just do it at their, you know, their drug addict shows. It's a tie between that and David Arquette actually winning a belt in WCW.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the worst.
David Arquette won a belt.
David Arquette, yes, was world heavyweight champion in WCW one time.
As David Arquette. Not playing a character. He was a celebrity and he got out there and he, quote, won.
Wow. Yes. Yeah, that's absolutely
it. That was about a week later, Vince McMahon bought WCW and shut it down.
that's a mercy kill.
We have officially run out of moves. Our king is in the corner. You have two rooks. We are done. Like, that was it. Spencer, I know you've got a small child at home and everything else. I don't want to keep you much longer. You said 15, 20 minutes, and we've gone long past that.
That's fine. You go right ahead.
I just wanted to point out one thing. The Fulmer Cup scoreboard right now, which just went up today on EDSBS, has epic, like, Shakespearean conflict within it. Penn State's up 2 points on Pitt, for one thing, and they will only let Pitt go above them if they play them twice in Penn State. But bigger and better is that Iowa State finally has a chance at winning something, and Gene Chizik has fucked them in the ass again.
Yes, he has. They're right there, and yet Chizik is here to ruin everything.
And he's destroyed them.
Yeah, and really at this point, the Fulmer Cup is kind of playing out a little bit like a NASCAR race. You know, like really, it's all about the second and third place runs at this point.
And you're sort of secretly hoping that somebody dies.
You maybe, how's this? I would be hoping for this. I would hope for an entire team to be caught in like the world's worst keg party. Like 30, this is what it would take. It's just like, you'd have to have like 5 or 6 players arrested for like felony criminal mayhem. Like I want the most benign and horrendous, like the most benign and like yet point heavy offenses, right? Like, a bunch of guys were arrested for mail fraud. You know, like that'd be fantastic, right? Something like that. Like, oh man.
Inside trading.
Yeah, these dudes are running some crazy mortgage security fraud. That would be fine with me. I don't actually want anyone to, like, you know, get hurt. What I would like is just, you know, somebody like, maybe some, if you're going to go ahead and do it anyway, go big stolen car ring, right? Better yet, Northwestern gets cracked for like a massive hacking ring. That would be the funniest thing ever. That would be the most Big Ten story ever. And also, yes, if they came up like 3 or 4 points shy of Auburn anyway, right? Like, despite 27 charges filed against him in court, you know?
How can,
half of them felonies.
That's not the most Big Ten thing. That's equally Pac-12-ish to do. You know, with Stanford, Al, UCLA.
No. The most Pac-12 thing to do would be to rack up the crimes and then have them taken back, right? Because they're really, like, they're sketchier than they let on, but just in, like, a more white-collar way than the SEC. The SEC's like, I done stole 27 cars. The fact then's like, I got old women to sign houses over to me under false pretense.
Yeah, it seems like, like, the Pac-10 is about as sketchy as the SEC, but they have Maury Levy as their attorney, and he just makes things sort of disappear. Come on, wire reference?
And they shut up afterwards. They're like, I shall retire to my exotic greenhouse and sit in my wheelchair with a blanket over me and drink sherry until I expire, having committed my crimes and prospered, right? Like a Raymond Chandler villain. Whereas the SEC will go, well, boys, you didn't get me this time, did you? know, like, definitely like some serious JR shit going on, right? Like, they won't just shut up and be like, well, man, I got off. That was pretty cool. No, 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 no. They'll continue to be like, well, isn't that curious, huh? I'm just here, a free man, standing on the steps, looking pretty, rich, and ready to rock.
This would all be different if Dukes of Hazzard had been set on the West Coast, by the way. I blame everything on the Dukes of Hazzard here.
So, you know, the reason that the Dukes of Hazzard could have never been on the West Coast is because, you know...
Too much traffic?
West Coast. Yeah, they're chill, man. They're just chill. You know, they get a little... Dukes get a little revved up. You know, people in the South will get a little revved up. Not cool to get all revved up, you know, out west. They'd be like, well, you know, we could run from the cops or... Shit. We'll just deal with it later, man.
Or we could smoke this joint.
Yeah. I'm all assuming this is pre-math, of course.
Yes.
Spencer, before we let you go, you have been working on the EDSBS annual fundraiser for the Refugee Resettlement and Immigration Services of Atlanta. A quick word about that.
Boy, you seriously rattled off the name of a pretty complex name of an agency there. I'm impressed.
He's been practicing all day. Like,
I'm a lawyer by trade.
I was going to say, I smell someone who speaks bureaucracy. Yeah, RESA is a refugee resettlement agency based in Clarkson, Georgia, and I still work in the field. So it's been like 5 years at this point. I used to work with refugees, and there are around 3,000 settled here in Atlanta every single year, and they come to the country with quite literally nothing, and are given everything, given a very small amount of assistance, generally around 6 months in total assistance, and then are told to be self-sufficient. And obviously, they need a lot of help to do that. And in doing so, that's what these agencies do. They provide, they literally pick them up at the airport, take them from point A to point B, get their kids in school, get them jobs, teach them how to be, you know, very, very terrified Americans. And the best part about helping them do this is that this is a time of need. The federal budget is being cut across the board. And one of the first things to go are those people who are potential Americans but not Americans, not voters. That would be refugees. So they really need it right now. It is a wonderful organization. And full disclosure, of course, I get to keep an eye on it because it is run by, you know, a former coworker and friend of mine, Katie Mixon, but nevertheless, just a fantastic organization, even though, of course, you know, we're behind it. I have to tell people that. I'm like, you know, we're raising money for them, but don't let that affect your opinion of it.
Now, Spencer, there is one caveat here. If we get to $50,000, what happens?
Well, the caveat is if we do raise $50,000, I got to get a tat. And the tat itself would be any number of options that the readers would vote on. Of course, we're probably not going to raise 50 grand, but it's a nice little carrot to hang out there since I would actually do it.
You should at least have something to aspire to.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, who knows? Some of these actually didn't sound too bad. Somebody was like, oh, man, you should get Ron Zook water skiing as a tat.
That'd be awesome.
Well, yeah, and I was like, ha, 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 hey, hey. You know, that doesn't sound too bad, man.
Oh, you might do that anyway.
I know. I was like, yeah, maybe we should just go ahead and, you know, light the candle. Do this.
The best example that LSU Freak put together, as far as my mind goes, is Les Miles eating your armpit hair.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
The most disturbing visual of all.
Oh, yes, but that's quintessentially Les Miles. If you do end up with $50,000, or I guess you don't end up with it, but if you do raise $50,000 and you do get Ron Zook water skiing, the all-important question is, across what part of your body does he water ski?
You know,
if you really wanted the action shot for future expansion and collapse of the abdominal muscles, you'd go right across the top of the belly, wouldn't you? So at first it would look like he was going across like a smooth sheet of, glass like water. But then over time it would sort of look like he was going over a waterfall.
Well, I am firmly in the camp of Ron P for Tat.
Ron P for I can't think of anything weirder than getting the former.
That would be awesome.
Like, the former Kansas State coach's Tat. Like, he'd be like, "Yeah, you're that dude who makes fun of me. You know my life's not a joke." And I'd be like, "Let me show you this."
Now you tell me with a straight face, sir, that your life is no joke.
But I want you to know, the weirdest part would be if I unveiled my Ron P. tat and he pulled up his shirt and had a tat of me, and we would have to just stand there for a minute, like, oh my God.
That's when the universe sort of folds in on itself and everything.
That's like a John Travolta, Nick Cage movie come to life.
Yeah. I will have that script for you by Monday, by the way.
Tat off.
That, either that or if he pulled up and he had himself. Like, just a tattoo of Ron P.
I've got that exact same one in the exact same place.
Like, I like your style, son. Oh, I like your style.
Well, Spencer has asked for donations in the format of scores we like, so let's hope for far more 2008 Iowa Penn State and far less 2002 Iowa Penn State.
Yeah, what was the score in the Florida Iowa Outback Bowl?
Fuck you.
No,
which one?
I mean the one where you beat us.
Oh, yeah. Okay, never mind.
That one's good, like 37-21 or something like that. We'll take that. 18. There we go.
That would be a fine donation. I can say the funniest. I will say the funniest amount that we've gotten from anybody is 222-0. $222.00 from a Georgia Tech grad in honor of Georgia Tech's victory over Cumberland College in the most lopsided college football game ever.
Nice.
And who was the coach of the Yellow Jackets for that game?
That would be John Heisman, who really did pull down quite an accomplishment when he got a divorce so nasty. One of the conditions was that he had to leave Atlanta. That's why he left Georgia Tech. The story is that he eventually went on to coach at Columbia afterwards with nowhere near the degree of success. And one of the reasons for that was his divorce from his wife, which was so acrimonious that in the terms of the divorce, written into the contract, dude had to leave Atlanta.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
Have you gotten $3.02 from an Auburn fan yet?
No, and I'm not going to say a damn bad thing about them for like a month. And I might have to change the site to like every day should be Pat Dyer Day next week because they really have. They've led in total donations and in total dollars.
Yikes.
Wow.
I guess this is War
Eagle.
I know, like after doing nothing but accusing their school of being the filthiest program in the nation, they've done nothing but do to me what I accuse them of doing to recruits. They've rained cash on the charity. So you might see some disturbing things on the site next week.
Well, with that, we'll let you go, bud. Hey, we want to thank Spencer Hall of EDSBS and the mothership SB Nation and various other web portals. Spencer, thanks a lot, bud.
Hey, and no problem. Thanks, guys.